You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, November 4th, 2012, and this is the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Joining us today from genderradic.com is Typhon Blue.
Hello.
As well as Eric Kimball from BladeBunny.com.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
And that leaves me. I'm Thomas Revoir from 910 Comics. That's 910CMX.com. And here's what's in the news. Our top story today, we've got a celebration. We've got a webcomic. Well, let's make that actually digital comic that's been around for 15 years now. Longtime webcomic creator Krishna Sadisavam tweeted, 15 years of making comics online tomorrow, back on October 20th. Hopefully he's being a bit droll and appending, why am I still doing this, even though a lot of us can definitely agree with that. Krishna is the man behind PC Weenies, which has appeared online since October 1998. The primary audience for this thrice-a-week comic are technology enthusiasts, engineers, systems administrators, IT people, software developers, and general geeks. While you're at it, be sure to check out Krishna's other webcomic over at Uncubed. We'll have a link for that over in our show notes. So for 15 years doing webcomics, that's definitely a congratulations that's well-deserved. And now let's go ahead and head over to Typhon. Typhon, you've got our buzz today. What do we have?
Well, the first item is Fox has released a clip based on a popular webcomic by brothers Malachi Nickel, who was 5 when the comic launched in 2009, and Ethan Nickel, 28. Axe Cop. The clip was created as a test for the series airing next summer as part of Fox's Adult Swim. The Halloween-themed segment based on the comic's Ask Axe Cop feature was created as a test for the series, which will air next summer as part of the network's Adult Swim style ADHD animation domination high definition Saturday night block. 6 15-minute episodes of Axe Cop have been ordered. The clip answers the haunting question, what does Axe Cop do for Halloween? And we have an interview with Sydney Padua. Sydney Padua, mad artistic genius behind the webcomic 2D Goggles, chronicling the whimsical crime-fighting adventures of the Victorian computing pioneers Charles Babbage and Ada Lovelace. It's seriously awesome. Where else can you get a delightful mix between extreme mathematics, steampunk engineering, and applied applied economics. And now it's about to become a 428-page volume for the iPad, with revised and additional material by Padua. Did I say that right? No.
Yep, sounds good enough for me.
Congrats on the new project, Padua.
Yep. So, Axe Cop is coming to animation domination over on Fox, joining such great quality shows as Family Dad, Family Guy, American Dad, and The Cleveland Show. Way to go, Fox. And since we're probably going to get sued over that, let's quickly jump over to our legal department. Eric, you've got a couple of humongous stories today.
Yeah, well, buckle in. We've got two interesting stories. The first one comes to us from Indiegogo, and this is a campaign by Michael Jonte. Michael Jonte posted a campaign for to help defend himself in a lawsuit. We're going to go through basically what this lawsuit is about from reading the briefs and talk a little bit about the campaign, because there are a couple questionable things going on here. Here's what both parties have agreed to within this campaign. As agreed, Gates Industry, a company that was started off as an animation studio, is suing Michael Jonte and his wife, Michael Jontz and his wife, for losses involved in a business deal that the Jontz backed out of. They both agreed to that. Gates Industry provided Michael Jontz and Nicole Jontz with office space, which they used and worked out of for this animation deal before they decided not to go ahead with it. Gates Industries paid the Jontz $2,000, which they are currently refusing to return for the work they delivered on this animation deal. The deal was involved to create an animation series and market that to publishers. Michael Jantz backed out of the deal before papers were signed and before any legal agreement was made, but the papers were drawn up. So what caused the deal to go south? Well, here's the point of disputes. Gates Industry claims that Michael Jantz promised to get his mother-in-law, Linda Bolt, to invest $400,000 with Gates Industries to jumpstart the project. When Jantz failed to produce to get these funds, the companies had to shut down the effort due to lack of funds. They say they've lost a lot because of that shutdown. Jantz denies that he promised to provide any funds to Gates Industries and says that it was simply that it's not true. Gates Industries, in their suit, is seeking to recoup the losses of buying the office space for the Jantz, the legal fees to prepare the paperwork for the deal, and the $2,000 they paid them. The actual amount is not listed, how much they're asking for, but a little research on my part we're probably looking at something in the range of $10,000 to $20,000 as the total amount owed for the office space, for the legal fees, and the $2,000 that was paid to the Jantz. Jantz, on his part, denies he owes any money to Gates Industries and is demanding that Gates Industries return all of his sketches. He also is demanding that Gates Industries pays him $11,773 for what he said is replaceable goods that Gates Industries used in the preparation of the animation work. I'm assuming this is artist tools and equipment, but it is not listed in the brief exactly what it is. So that's the actual case and the point of dispute. Now, the reason this sort of came to our attention is Jantz started a Kickstarter. And the Kickstarter listed on its heading said, "Know Your Creator Rights. I am raising funds to fight a frivolous lawsuit. When business is unfair and unethical, creators need to fight back." The problem is this court case has nothing to do with creator rights. The Gates industry is not holding on to any of Jantz's IP, such as in creator rights cases where the Schusters were trying to get rights to Superman back. There's nothing involved with creator rights, and also the deal does not look unethical on the face of it. It seems like this is a general dispute over a contract. The other thing that's a little curious about this is Jantz is asking for $56,200 for his Kickstarter to defend himself. This is an amount that is far in excess of what he could possibly owe Gates Industries, at least as far as I could determine. It could be the total cost of going to trial, but with a lawyer, but it is unclear exactly what this money is for. Jantz is not, in his Kickstarter, is not offering to return the money if the case settles early, if it is thrown out of court or anything. He's not offering to do anything for this money in the campaign. And I have been saying Kickstarter, I should correct, this is an Indiegogo campaign. But Jantz is not offering anything in return for the money. He just wants the money to have the legal fees. And these legal fees do seem to be a matter of pride over a matter of necessity. So the whole thing is a little curious. And what makes it even more a little questionable is the history that Michael Jantz has. In 2004, Jantz had a fundraiser for Keeping Norm Alive, and he did state online that he was doing this to keep the comic running, and that if he didn't get his targeted goal, he would have to stop doing his comic. In exchange for donating to the campaign, you would get exclusive access to the comic, and after exclusive access to the comic as it would be emailed to you, you'd become a member. It was a membership system. The campaign ran. Jantz did get money from it. After the campaign ran, the comic was posted online for free on Go Comics. It's unclear if the membership fees were returned or not, but there was a slight bit of concern that it wasn't exactly what he was saying, since Jantz did claim that if he didn't get the fees, he would be forced to end the comic, and then he didn't end the comic. So there's a lot of this about this that is very curious, and we will be discussing this in the discussion portion a little later, getting into more details about it. But it is something you've got to look out for, and with the case of all Kickstarter and Indiegogo campaigns, buyer beware. You got to do your research on these because you can get duped and you can get misled. At this time, Jansu's campaign has 20 days to go, and he has raised $6,000 from supporters.
Let me interject in there just for a moment, Eric, because I want to thank T. Campbell, webcomic historian and our collaborator here at the Webcomic Beacon Newscast, for the information that he had on the history of the norm and it. We haven't had time to verify that yet.
Tom, no, I did verify it. I did go and pull those articles out. The reason I didn't say it was T. Campbell because I did do the research. But yeah, T. Campbell did give me that lead, and I do appreciate the help, but I don't want to have my opinion be his opinion. This is from my personal opinion and my personal research. It is not T. Campbell's opinion. So, yes, but it is useful that he did give me that research. And from there, I will move on to the next article. Our friend Charles Carrion is back in the news. I wouldn't be a newscast if he didn't do something crazy. So instead of talking about creators doing questionable things, let's talk about lawyers behaving badly. And Charles Carrion, our friend and our friendly neighborhood super lawyer, has gone from cartoonish villainy to just cartoonish. Now, for those of you who haven't listened to every podcast, let's do a quick review. Charles Carrion was a lawyer representing a website called Funny Junk. Funny Junk was a site that reposted a creator's work without attribution. Funny Junk got Charles Carrion to send a cease letter to the Oatmeal, which was complaining about Funny Junk reposting its stuff. Well, the Oatmeal, a very popular webcomic, posted it online, the cease and desist letter, and this went viral. People were very upset about it. Inman started a campaign to raise money for charities based off of this cease and desist letter. Now, Funny Junk's response to this was to basically batten the hatches and disappear from the internet for a while. Carrion did not act the same way. Carrion took a left turn from sanity and started suing everyone. He sued Inman, the creator of the Oatmeal, for defamation of his character. He sued the National Cancer Foundation and the World Wildlife Fund, the people who would be the recipients of Inman's charity fund, and he sued the Attorney General of California because he wasn't deciding in the way Charles Carrion wanted him to decide. This was crazy, and Charles Carrion persisted in this lawsuit for about a month. During this time of this lawsuit, before Charles Carrion dropped his lawsuits, a satirical website was started up, charlescarrion.com. Now, the website was anonymously was registered through registrar's private registration, which promises not to reveal the identity of the registrar. Charles Carrion sent a threatening letter to registrar.com, and they caved and released the owner of this site. Charles Carrion then sent a cease and desist letter to the owner of the site. The owner of the site contacted the Electronic Frontiers Foundation, a free speech organization, and they promised to represent him. Charles Carrion then sent a very confusing letter saying, "I'm not going to sue you now while you're represented by the Electronic Frontiers Foundation. I'm going to wait till they're not around, and then I'm going to sue you, costing you lots of money." Well, in response to that, the lawyer from the Electronic Frontiers Foundation said, "Fine, we'll settle this right now," and started a lawsuit to settle the matter ahead of time so that Charles Carrion couldn't sue in the future. That's where we left it off. Now we have the next chapter. So the suit to resolve whether charlescarrion.com is a satirical site and allowed under fair use, or if it's a site that is violating Charles Carrion, is supposed to be in courts. Unfortunately, Charles Carrion is dodging the summons for this court case. He's doing comical things, such as hiding in his house, refusing to answer the door. Any letters sent to his house, he seals up in another envelope and sends back to the sender unopened. All of this is an attempt to avoid receiving the summons, because under law, if you don't receive the summons, you aren't required to appear in court. And this is all an attempt to, yet again, cost his opponent money. This is Charles Carrion's standard procedure. He goes in here and costs people money just to punish them. And we are at the point where now he has to be served with the summons, so the only way to get to him is to stake out his house. That's right. We have to call in a bounty hunter to sit and stake out his house to summon him to court. It's getting absolutely ridiculous. The problem is bounty hunters cost money, and Charles Carrion is well aware of this. The Electronic Frontier Foundation does remind everyone that they can donate to the Electronic Frontier Foundation for cases like this and for when people are abusing the legal system. And this is clearly a case of it. All of this comes to us from PopeHat.com, our sort of legal advisor online. And if you check in the past, we have had him on the podcast. But that is our huge legal system, legal section for this week, Tom.
Thanks a lot, Eric. And after that long discussion, we're going to go ahead and take our first break. We'll be back with more news and our discussion period right after this.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and AnimationAficionados.com.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Let's go ahead and go dive right into our business section with Typhon. Typhon, you've got some interesting stories today.
Yes, I do. Chris Robertson, owner of Monkey Brain Comics, announced this week that all of the company fees taken into the sale of its books in the month of November will be donated to the Hero Initiative, a foundation that fights for comic book creators to regain and maintain their creative rights. Monkey Brain Comics is an independent label that has recently moved to the digital publishing world. The company is best known for the comic iZombie, created by the company owner Chris Robertson. And Scrolling.
I think this next story is about what's probably been one of the biggest stories that we've seen out of the entertainment this week.
Disney merges with Lucas and promises to create a Star Wars 5. Penguin merges with Random House and promises to print boring, pretentious books that you're forced to do reports on in middle school. That doesn't sound fun. Star Wars 5?
Well, actually, it'd be Star Wars 7. And from what I've seen in reports, it's going to be... originally, Lucas had three trilogies planned. The first ones we saw, which were the middle three, then the prequels, and then the sequels, which would be of Luke Skywalker as the aged Jedi. And, hey, the people are old enough to play the same things. I'm sure Mark Hamill would love to get back in the Jedi togas.
Okay.
Yeah. But let's go ahead and go on that note. Since we've gotten a little bit of education from that, let's go into some real education. Eric, what have you got for us today?
Two quick things in education. The first is two articles from Nothing Can Possibly Go Wrong, and the fourth letter, talk about maintaining a balance in your writing life. It goes through some techniques to maintain a balance in your life and when to figure out how to make time for writing. It's a good set of reads, and it helps you, and hopefully it will help you optimize your day. The second one comes to us from Kleefeld on Comics, and this is just a quick article about why comic books smell like clay. And it goes through a bit of the alchemy that goes into comic books and why when you open them up they have that distinctive smell. And that's it for us from education, Tom.
Terrific. And you've also got a tech section today. You've got one story there, but it sounds like a very important one. What have you got?
Well, we've been talking about PayPal for a while. There's been a bunch of strange things coming out of PayPal, including a change in their agreement that you can't have a class action lawsuit against them. Well, today we found out why they may be having that agreement. It seems that there are some open security holes in the PayPal system that can expose your credit card numbers to people who hack in. As of the time of writing this, PayPal has not released if they've fixed these security holes and have not addressed the problems within the system. So it could be that PayPal is facing a situation where they have an open security flaw and they're trying to change things legally in case someone steals your information from PayPal. But it should be something that everyone be wary about. When you put your credit card information into PayPal, that can be retrieved by hackers. That's it for the tech section. Back to you, Tom.
That's definitely a story we're going to want to keep up on.
Yep.
But let's go ahead and go back to Typhon now. Typhon, you've got our oddity section. You've got this one story that we talked about before the show, and it certainly sounds like one that some of our viewers out there are really going to enjoy. What have you got?
It's four times better than any of our stories. Go ahead.
For those of you who went to see Total Recall just for the three-breasted Martian prostitute, we have a story that goes one better. Literally. Sony has run a risque Vita advertisement in France. What's risque about it? Well, the woman in the ad has a front and back rack. Yep, four boobies. Two touchable sides, the ad reads, in French, of course, two times the sensation. What more needs to be said?
Oh, I'm sure we can think of plenty to say on this, but we'll hold on to it.
And physics explains Cthulhu. A physicist has written a paper about parallel dimensions that could theoretically explain entities such as Cthulhu. Cthulhu could be in your home right now, staring at you from an invisible dimension you can't see or touch. Be afraid.
Oh,
and
no.
If you want more on that, on how Cthulhu could be anywhere, the link is in the show notes.
And I'll hold off. I'll eliminate the joke that I was going to say on that one. But we're going to go ahead and take our break now. We'll be back with our discussion period with a couple of guests, and we'll be right back after this.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. It's time for our discussion period. Our panelists today are from Hello the Future at hello-the-future.net, Nicole Deeker.
Hello, and those are hyphens. Dashes are longer.
Lightbunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings, Internet.
That's from genderatic.com. That's GenderRatic.
Yay!
No hyphens in there, or dashes. Typhon Blue.
Where my gerunds at?
Where's the N dash? That's what I want to know.
I can tell you where your N dash is, Eric, but I'd get thrown off the show. And that leaves me from 910 Comics. It's 910CMX.com, Thomas Ramore. Our top story for discussion is what was probably our lengthiest one, and that is our, as I scroll down myself, our talk about the Indiegogo campaign with Michael Jansky. Since both of the parties in the suit are from Atlanta, Georgia, I asked John Lotshaw from AccidentalCentaurs.com and the Bill Holbrook store to jump on, since he knows the parties involved, and participate in this. Now, John...
Greetings from somewhere. I don't... Where the... Somewhere in Tennessee.
But I'm going to go ahead and, John, since we discussed the story in the news, we said what was going on in the news story, why don't you go ahead and give us what you know about the story?
Well, what I know is Mike Jansy, who is a, full disclosure here, Mike Jansy is a friend of mine. I know him through the National Cartoonist Society. He is a professor at Savannah College of Art and Design, professor of sequential art, which means he teaches comics. And he is also on the side does a lot of consulting and freelance work in animation as well as in comics. He's a very, very knowledgeable guy. I've been on panels with him before, and just a really, really knowledgeable guy. And apparently what has happened here, he was consulting with another party that was trying to get an animation studio started up, that would work in conjunction with Bento Box, Productions, which produces, some shows for Fox. I think they do Bob's Burgers, if I'm not mistaken, along with developing other projects. Bento Box is in the process of doing a large expansion in the Atlanta area, and this was going to tie in with that somehow. And Mike Jansy has done some animation work. He's done animation for clients such as YouTube. I mean, I don't mean videos that would go up on YouTube. He was doing videos for YouTube to tell you how to upload your videos to YouTube. There's a difference there. He's done animation for other clients such as King Features, Syndicate. He had one that was part of the entries into the Annecy Animation Festival. And so he was consulting with this other party in an attempt to developed the business to the point where it could be integrated in with Bento Box, apparently. And it all went south. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand from reading the complaints, basically what it boiled down to was there were agreements made, allegedly on a verbal basis.
Right. $400,000 was going to be loaned.
A $400,000 investment.
Yeah.
In exchange for which, Mike Jansy's wife, Nicole, would be put on staff with this new animation company, mm-hmm. and be able to get benefits, stuff like that. But the problem here is that, and this is really the only fault that I could find on Mike Jansy's part is that this was all verbal. And he should, and I know he knows better, and it just shows that that even people who do know better can fall into this trap of, oh, I know him, I can trust him, but, you know, when verbal things go south, they go south horribly.
Right.
And this appears to be a case of no good deed goes unpunished because of what the Jansys were providing in terms of consulting, things like that. They had to forego other paying work in the anticipation that this would pay and make a much larger payoff down the road. And there were apparently misunderstandings over who was going to provide what. And again, there's nothing on paper, so it quickly becomes a shouting match of who said what and when, if they ever said it at all. He said, she said. And that's the kind of mess that this is.
Yeah, but here's the thing, John, and here's the thing which kind of got my interest. If that was the case, if it was just a case of making bad promises and a dispute between two parties, this would be something we'd let the courts settle, and the courts should settle this. This is the case why we have courts. The thing is, Jansy went on and did an Indiegogo campaign asking the community to pay for it, and his Indiegogo campaign was about the label was protect creator rights, and this has nothing to do with creator rights. I mean, the whole thing has nothing to do with that, and so he's basically creating an Indiegogo campaign with the top line being a lie. about what it's about. I mean,
right, the amount that he's asking for was is $56,200, which, as we said in this previous story, is far in excess of what he is being asked for, which is basically $2,000 plus.
Well, we don't, Tom. Let me correct that. I estimated that number based on reading the brief. I don't know what they're asking for.
Well, it seems from what I read in the brief, it basically seems like they are trying to get some of the money recouped. Gate Industries, and let me talk about Gate Industries in a moment, but they're trying to recoup a lot of the money that they lost because the project fell through, because allegedly Jazzy didn't bring the money in that he promised, according to them, that he said he would be. Now, let me go ahead and say, because I did a little quick search for Gate Industries, and I didn't find anything. Eric here did find the person behind it, whose name is Nick Applegate, who does have an IMDb page with one credit behind him as a executive producer. This thing just seems odd all the way around. But the whole thing, the Indiegogo campaign to raise this money, unlike every other Indiegogo or Kickstarter campaign that we've seen, there is no promise of some sort of return. It's just an effort to raise money.
Well, you know, that's the difference between Indiegogo and Kickstarter. Kickstarter requires there to be a product as a component
right.
of the project. And in fact, Kickstarter recently changed their rules to require, a couple of things. One, that you couldn't sell multiple copies, and the other, that you actually, that you couldn't do a prototype and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Kickstarter changed this rule. But the deal about Indiegogo, and the reason Indiegogo has become so successful recently, is because you can use it to raise money for anything. You can use it to raise money for, you know, someone in your family who doesn't have health insurance and might need some cash for procedure. You can use it to raise money to help you move. You know, you can use it to raise money for just about anything you want. So that's a separate issue from whether this guy is doing something appropriate.
Mm. That is true.
And I do know, John, you've already contributed to Jancy's Indiegogo campaign, I believe you said.
Yes, I did. I kept full disclosure. I did contribute money to it. But mainly, I contributed it to because Mike Jancy is a friend. And I would have contributed regardless of what the tagline was, because Mike Jancy is a personal friend.
Right.
So getting that out of the way. But you know, you're right. This is not about this is not a thing where somebody is, trying to steal the norm out from under it.
Right.
As far as we know, from the paperwork, we it doesn't say that, but you know, you never know. But also, here's another thing that we don't know exactly. We don't have 100% of the details because it's not into this level of detail in the complaint. There was apparently artwork
yes.
that Jancy had created that is being held by an equipment also that is owned by the Jancy's computer equipment that was put into an office owned by Gate Productions. And they are locked out and not able to retrieve their personal belongings. Now, again, like you said, this is the sort of thing we have courts for. But we don't know because the complaint does not require, disclosure of what that artwork was, just that pieces of art were left behind. For all we know, this could have been something that they were developing together, to present, to pitch.
Well, and actually, that would tie into the creator's rights situation.
That's exactly where I was heading, is that if this were the case, and again, there's no way to know because it's not in the complaint, and I'm speculating here, would tie into the creator's rights.
It's not in the counter-complaint. Jonty's counter-complaint specifically mentions the equipment. It specifically mentions return of the sketches, but it has no complaint for
no description of it or a description say that this artwork was in support of intellectual properties developed by Michael Jancy. No, because the complaint doesn't have to.
But no, intellectual property, if you were actually asking for ownership of an intellectual property, you would have had to put it in the counter-complaint. Neither the complaint or the counter-complaint talks about any intellectual property, any ownership of any characters or anything like that. Jonty didn't ask for that in his legal brief either. So I think it's pretty clear that it's not being asked for at the very least. And if this went to court, no ownership of intellectual property one way or the other would be rewarded.
Well, not with this version of the complaint. Complaints can be and often are amended as the proceedings go along.
Right.
And complaints are added and removed and modified. Because this is just, of course, this is in the very early stages of this whole process. These complaints get amended, get changed, and get turned into completely different things by the time that they reach a courtroom.
Right. And
so again, we don't know.
But no, we do know at this moment it's not about it. Yes, it can be amended to anything.
You're right. You're right. At this moment, we do not know that we know that this is not about that. There's that possibility that it can still become that as the complaint becomes amended and the allegations go back and forth between the parties.
Right.
Well, I'm just saying that possibility is still out there. Just because it is not in the initial brief doesn't mean that it is closed off forever. Is all I'm saying.
Yes, and I agree, but the stumbling part.
At this point in time, you're absolutely correct. Yeah. You're right. At this point in time.
Oh my God, the two of them are agreeing. And I think at this point, we're going to go ahead and go on to our next topic. John, thank you for joining us.
I'm going to get back on the road. Thanks for having me, guys, and we'll see you all around.
Thank you all. John Lotz, everybody. See his stuff over at accidentalcentaurs.com as well as the Bill Holbrook Store and Moonbase Press, which he hosts. Thank you, John.
Okay. All right. Take care.
And then on to something else that's even crazier. The other story that we had in our legal division was our good friend Charles Carrion.
Yeah, we go from gray to so black and white it's blinding.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see too much of a discussion on this because it basically is somebody who is using the legal system to harass people is using loopholes in the legal system to not be harassed himself. He's using, you know, the poor man's way of getting out of lawsuit by not accepting the summons.
Yeah.
To where somebody's going to have to camp out on his doorstep and try every trick in the book to get him out to give him that summons. I mean, come on, folks. This one isn't even somebody who is so pro-law system can see there's not a good thing about this.
Actually, I could see a way to make this good. You should have the Benny Hill soundtrack playing. and then just list all of his antics. Or, no, get video of his antics.
Oh, I would pay so much for video of Charles Carrion being served. I will put this out. I will donate for serving Charles Carrion, provided they record it. I have to see that video.
And I would definitely donate to that, but only if they put it to Benny Hill.
Benny Hill, definitely, yes.
Okay, so everybody, I think we've got our next Indiegogo campaign. Eric Gimble is going to start an Indiegogo campaign to raise money to have Charles Carrion served only if it is recorded.
Only if it's recorded with the Benny Hill theme. I am on that.
Oh, boy. Oh.
Well, hi, this is Eric on report here. It turns out we found out that one of our own, Fess, used to deliver summonses to individuals, and he's going to talk a little bit about that experience and what the people delivering summons to Charles Carrion might be. Here's Fess right now.
Many years ago, I was working for a then girlfriend's of mine, uncle, that... you know, we needed money at the time, and we both were delivering court summons for him. So you know, you got paid after you got to deliver it. And my then girlfriend Heidi was always like, oh, it's going to be like on the TV where, you know, they don't want to touch it and everything. So there are a few where I tried to like deliver. I only had like some information, and sometimes I had to go look online or in public records to see if I could find a different address. And there's been some times where I've tried to deliver to the workplace. There's this one guy, he would never be at work. And I eventually found his address as I dressed up as a flower delivery person and put the envelope in with the flowers. And I delivered it to this home that was on like a lakeside. And that was pretty funny. There was another time in which I was kind of staking out an apartment building for a while because they never would open the door. You could hear that somebody was in there. And I eventually got them to the point where they cracked open the door just a little bit. I threw the envelope into the apartment and I said, that counts as a delivery. And they yell, no, it doesn't. Though I was told that it technically did because I did make contact with them. So I'm not sure of the full legal parameters as far as what counts as being delivered or not. But I was told that did count. So it's kind of interesting, the business that it is. I've never actually felt like my life has been threatened or in danger by some of this sort of stuff, but I'm certain that in some parts of areas of cities and such, it could be a bit a little bit more dangerous.
Yeah, and it often sounds more comical than it does dangerous. Dressed up as a flowery delivery guy.
I think I might have just went overboard on that one because of, you know, TV.
How did the person react to that? I'm sort of curious. They oh, someone loves me. Oh, no, someone's giving me a court case.
Actually, what he said is like, were you the one going and harassing my employees? So he knew I was there, and he knew that he was going to be given a summons, and is like, you know, I didn't harass anybody, and I just left. But no, there was one I actually had to drive like a couple hours away to some farm to deliver, or some sort of like, you know, large house, big property sort of thing, and I don't know exactly what it was all about, but. No, it was really interesting because the lawyer that I was working for made it sound like he was a big fish, that and he actually I think he was actually a lawyer himself of who I was delivering to, and it sounds like oh boy, he made a big mistake sort of thing. So that was a good payoff for me. I think that was like a $200 summons for me.
And was it hard to deliver to the lawyer? I mean, because the experience that seems to be happening with Charles Carrion is that. He knows all the tricks, so it's almost impossible to deliver to him. Was it hard to deliver to the lawyer?
Surprisingly, no. It wasn't hard to deliver, and also the attorney I was working for also was surprised of, oh. Like maybe it went through really quick and the other lawyer didn't anticipate it just then, or maybe he didn't know that particular address was something that my lawyer had.
So you caught him unaware.
Quite possibly. I mean, I had no idea of a lot of this content at the time. I mean, I don't read this sort of stuff. I mean, I look at the name and sometimes I come up with, you know, if I can find a different address at the time. I think I learned also that when you see on TV is like, oh no, I'm not going to touch that. It doesn't count if I touch it. Well, if you're right there, I think it still counts as being delivered. You're right there, even though if you like, oh, I didn't touch. Well, you're right there, and they're giving you the summons. You'd have to check on what the actual legal parameters are for that. But I think TV and movies are kind of not accurate.
Well, the little research I did, the laws differ state by state.
Okay.
Some states, if you've delivered it and they send it back, they obviously received it. So. That counts as delivery.
Well, it could have been received by a third party that intercepted it, but you can't just say, I don't like being handed things.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's all I got.
Well, that's very interesting.
Anything else that you want to give advice to the people who are now chasing after Charles Carrion, the fugitive at large?
Get it on tape.
Yes, please. I would like to reiterate that. Please get it on tape. It will be hilarious.
Aside from that, that's all I got. I figure it could add something.
Yeah, if it could somehow involve a gorilla costume, that would be perfect. That's all I'm saying. Dress up as, you know, Father Delivery, gorilla costume, something interesting. That would make it even better. And I'd like to thank Fess for giving us that personal story, and now we bring you back to the previously recorded newscast.
Yeah, it's sort of a pain in the ass, but I mean, this is the problem when dealing with a lawyer, is that they know all the tricks.
Well, not just lawyers, I mean, with dealing with unethical, and I'm sorry, there is no doubt that this is an unethical practice, folks.
Yeah.
He is basically using the legal system to beat people in and cost them money, which a lot of them can't afford, until he gets out of it. Now, I'm glad that the Electronic Frontiers Foundation is
it Frontiers or Freedom? Did I mess that up?
I don't know. I believe it's Frontiers, but I don't know. The EFF, we'll just call them the EFF now, as they should be called, has basically said, we're going to take this over and we're going to make sure that something happens on this. So it's not really the O'Neill or the people behind that. It's the EFF that is now working with this and the ones who are doing this.
Yeah, it's Frontier. But yeah, go ahead.
It really is. I'm glad there's an organization out there, even though I don't always agree with them. They are definitely on the right in this side for dealing with this legal thug. And I will say that again, legal thug who is using the law to beat people into the poorhouse.
Yeah. The world, you may not agree with him all the time. In fact, you probably don't agree with him 90% of the time. Because they take on some really strange cases, but the world is a better place because they are there. And if I could encourage people to donate to something, donating to them is always, your money is always going to making the world better. Now, granted, they'll argue things that you hate. I mean, I promise every single person listening to this podcast, the Electronic Frontier Foundation will be arguing something that you are against them arguing. But the fact that there is someone out there that can support people when they have to stand up for their free speech rights is really, it makes the world so much better.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say on that.
Now I've got yakky sacks running through my head. That's a lot, folks.
Yeah.
But let's go ahead and go on to our third story. And this is one that, as we said, has been huge. And that is the sale, not so much a merger, but the sale of the LucasArts division from George Lucas, which includes Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all that stuff, to Disney. I mean, good Lord, first ABC and then Pixar and now Lucasfilms. I mean, Disney's, if they weren't a monster before, they're getting there now, but I cannot fault Lucas for selling this, especially to a company like Disney that has shown they take properties that once the creator loses his interest, or like with the Muppets when Jim Henson died, would flounder, they're turning it into something.
I just had a thought, and it sort of ties into the physics of Cthulhu. Who's to say that as Cthulhu assumes the substance of our dimension, he doesn't turn into large corporate entities that gobble all kinds of entertainment intellectual properties?
Well, that does explain Microsoft.
So you're saying Disney is actually Cthulhu, and we've just never known for the past 200 years, which kind of makes sense. It's about the time Lovecraft was starting to write all this about this mysterious creature who appears and makes dreams
black,
come true.
In the form of a mouse.
Yes. But on the positive side, I mean, when Lucas, after the dismal reaction to Star Wars, quote, 1, 2, and 3, the prequel Star Wars, decided not to do any more. I was disappointed because I actually think that the last three in his three trilogies with the aged Luke Skywalker would have been some of the best, because there was the promise after that as to what would go on. I think with Disney controlling this stuff now,
the only way to go was up, really.
Yeah.
I mean, are we actually eager for Disney to be making Star Wars movies?
Well, you know, Disney can put out a decent plot at the very least. Like, they know how to write.
Well, and especially, I mean, I don't know who here in our group has seen it yet. I went and I saw Wreck-It Ralph on Friday morning.
Oh, I've seen Wreck-It Ralph.
Don't tell me anything. I don't
I
see
liked
it until Tuesday.
I liked it.
You can
I
tell me that, yes.
Not just that, but with John Lasseter, the former head of Pixar, as one of the high muckamucks over at Disney since the Pixar buyout, they've also included a short in front of there, which the same thing that Pixar has been doing, where their young people get a chance to stretch their wings. Wreck-It Ralph and the short before it, Paper Man, are bits of genius in there.
Yeah.
And I really think that if we get the care that we've seen from Lasseter and Pixar, and now with a lot of the Disney animation, I'm going to avoid the live-action Disney stuff, I think the Star Wars things can be back up there with what we remember Star Wars and Empire and Return of the Jedi were.
Remember, Disney, I mean, we like to complain about Disney, but Disney became Disney because they were the best at making animation. I mean, they really made engaging animation, and they made great stories. You know?
Well, and not just animation, because Disney was on the forefront of a lot of stuff. I mean, the Wide World of Disney and the Disney television shows to the Mickey Mouse Club, which was Howdy Doody, were the memorable things from the 50s kid stuff, to the risks they took with things like the live-action movies of The Black Hole and Tron, which is still a waypoint in the history of film.
Yep. It could be good. It isn't necessarily the end of everything.
Yeah, I mean...
Here's the big question. Will Disney release a version of Star Wars where Han shoots first, now that it's taken out of Lucas's control?
Oh, please let them.
I mean, if I were Disney, if I would look at this, the smartest thing I could do is say, releasing from the Disney vault, Han shoots first on Blu-ray, only available for 2 days, you know?
Just 2 hours of Han shooting first.
2 hours.
And just repeating.
Well, I mean, I'd say...
And then retire. I mean, that's it.
I would go through and never to be released from the Disney vault, Indiana Jones 4.
That's also true, yeah.
One thing that I have read about this is that with the buyout, it looks like the plans for Indiana Jones 5 have been nixed, and there will not be another Indiana Jones film, which is okay, because Harrison Ford is, what, 70-something now?
I mean, but you could do a good Indiana Jones film with a new actor, couldn't you? Or is Harrison Ford just so married to that role?
I think that it's Harrison Ford is Indiana Jones, just like you really couldn't recast Han Solo or Princess Leia or Luke Skywalker. You really can't recast Indiana Jones. Although, I mean, let me flip that back, because the Young Indiana Jones Adventures, which were a short-lived series on TV, were terrific, and it did have a different actor. You can't exactly have Harrison Ford playing a teenage Indiana Jones. So, I don't know. I mean, they could reboot the whole thing, and if it's given the care, but, yeah, I don't know. But
it also makes me wonder, though, you know, we could have some new stories. I mean, there's no reason why we need to have another Indiana Jones movie besides it being a cash cow and a fandom, you know?
Yeah.
Right, I mean, it's Star Wars.
Both Star Wars and Indiana Jones are sort of genre films in their own right. When you say Indiana Jones, you're thinking of sort of pulp action, And you could do an Indiana Jones movie set in the Indiana Jones universe and not have Indiana Jones, just as you could do a Star Wars movie set in the Star Wars universe and not have any of the Star Wars characters.
Right. I mean, even Lucas himself...
and they've done that.
Indiana Jones is basically the old Saturday morning serials. Star Wars is Japanese films.
Yeah.
A lot, the samurai-style films. So, I mean, yeah, and I really do think that Star Wars and Indiana Jones and the other Lucas properties definitely need new infusion of blood. I mean, especially with the long go, fortunately, most people have forgotten Star Wars Christmas special.
Yeah. Here's a question.
Oh, come on. If Disney released that, that would be a large chunk of cash right there.
Released
2 days from the Disney vault Star Wars Christmas special.
Yeah, that's one of those things that...
I would love them to remake the Christmas special or something and just call it the Christmas special and see how people reacted to it. But it would be like epic, you know, and they're like, no, wait, what happened to Wookiees having porn and stuff like that?
Oh, boy. But I think we can all agree that, for the most part, the Disney buyout is a good thing. You know, I mean, we've seen a lot of good things from the Marvel buyout by Disney. We've seen a lot of good things from the Muppet buyout of Disney, from the Pixar buyout of Disney. And bringing all those different factors in there, I'm waiting for the X-Men Star Wars crossover.
Wasn't there an X-Men? There was an X-Men Star Trek crossover.
Star Trek, yes. It is, they had a couple of books out there, and they've had some comic books out there about Star Wars. But, I mean, Star Trek crosses over with everything. I mean, they're having a Star Trek Doctor Who crossover right now.
Here's an interesting question. Are people okay with passing on their works to new blood to sort of reimagine it? Let's assume you eventually get world famous. Are you okay with someone taking your characters, your world, and having someone else work with it?
I think that's a person-by-person thing. I mean, I could take a look at something from Lucas, who's obviously okay with it because he's making the sale, to the way that Gene Roddenberry was with Star Trek, where Roddenberry said that the only official Star Trek were the ones that he personally worked on.
But let me ask you, Tom, would you be okay with it?
Yeah.
Nicole?
I could easily be bought.
Nicole, would you be okay with someone taking over your works?
Well, since I'm not a webcomic artist and since I'm a musician, I have a different sort of thing. People covering my work I have no problem with. And since I'm a one-person band, it's not as if someone could sort of menudo a new me, as it were. But, yeah, people covering or remixing my stuff, I'm totally cool with.
Has anyone ever done that with yours? Covered your stuff? Nicole? We lost her.
Well,
She was replaced.
Yeah, well, apparently she was.
Well, we're running out of time, so let's go ahead and jump over to our last story.
Please,
one
Tom,
that we can.
I want to say my bit because I actually did this. I sold my work, and I thought I would be cool with it. And I can tell you, there is not a pain like seeing someone else write your story. And even if it's good, it hurts. And I think Lucas is going to have parts where he's going to be upset. And so my heart goes out to him because there is not a pain like having someone else play in your playground.
That's true, but I always remember the best insult I've ever heard. And that was when Harrison Ford had threatened to tie George Lucas down and make him read his own dialogue.
Oh, she's back.
She's back.
Yeah. But let's go ahead and go on to our fourth story. The last one said we're short on time. And, folks, we had no choice. We had to bring this one up for the discussion. And that is the Sony PS Vita. This is the handheld console game with the touchpad on the back. Their ad in France where they're talking about two times the sensations with a picture of a woman with a well-endowed front and back.
I love the French. I just love France. I'm sorry. I'm so glad there's a country like France in this world.
Hey, we've always said, I mean, sex sells. And, I mean, this definitely, how well will it sell the PS Vita? That's a good question. But it is immediately drawing attention, and it is immediately catching people's eyes.
So are they implying that the only reason young boys play video game handheld consoles is because they can't touch boobs?
Yes.
To which I can reply, Lara Croft.
Yeah. Was there a question about this?
Yeah. I mean, most of the people who are wanting the PS Vita now are definitely in the younger demographic, and it really is. It used to be, you know, hiding Playboys under your bed. Now it's going and playing Grand Theft Auto and Tomb Raider to where you can, or DOA volleyball, where you get the physics specifically just for bouncing boobs.
Well,
there a game for? I've not heard of this game. There's so much I don't know. There's a game about bouncing boobs.
Oh my God!
Well, you can say that. Yeah, I mean, leave out the Playboy games. Yeah.
Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball.
Where they have the over-endowed female characters from the Dead or Alive games playing beach volleyball.
Yeah.
Beach volleyball and being well-endowed, just from a female perspective, that sounds like the worst combination. Because, you know, there is force when you jump up and go down.
But
volleyball Olympic sport during the Olympics, and all the women in there were strapped down and seemed almost flat. And I'm sorry, that takes away 90% of the fun of watching volleyball.
Yeah, but I mean, Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball. To bring in our other story about the physics of Cthulhu, that game is physics not of our world.
I see. That. So this is why they can actually spike and jump, when they go down, they don't knock the breath out of themselves.
They give themselves black eyes. Yeah.
I can't believe you haven't seen it. You have to look at some videos because it is so many levels of bizarre.
talk about some of the other bizarre stuff. One of my favorite stories was the animators of Who Framed Roger Rabbit literally went through, and the jiggle of Jessica Rabbit is inverse to a way that normally a woman normally works, just so they get that extra bounce in there. And
oh yeah,
she's not a woman, she's a rabbit.
Yeah, that
she's
is true.
Rabbit, she's different. Is she a rabbit?
No, she's a human too.
She hides it well.
Yeah. No, she's got normal ears and really tiny feet. I mean,
she's a rabbit by
marriage. She's married. Yeah, she's a rabbit by marriage.
So she's a converted rabbit.
Yes.
Well, I was looking at this image, and I don't know how crude we can get on this show, but the first thought that came to mind is I said, well, that's going to sort of complicate the missionary position. And then my second thought was, you know, logistically, this would really assist, or this would really spice up a devil's threesome.
I was thinking,
email
on this one, but I mean, when I saw this picture, and for those who haven't seen it, we'll have a link in the show notes for those who definitely want to see this thing. It's a low cut outfit on the front and the back, so you get a generous view of it. And I was thinking, okay, this allows certain positions from behind to really be more fun.
Yeah.
And even more, I mean, well, okay, women, start hating me now. Yes. Oh, thanks a lot, Eric. You can go through and have fun without having to look her in the face.
Yay!
I mean, this is sort of interesting because there's been a lot of teeth-gnashing about this, but it's sort of silly because, yes, video games are targeted at young boys, and yes, having sexy stuff attracts young boys, and there is a point where you just have to admit that is your market, instead of saying, oh, woe is me, why won't these young boys be more interested in deep psychological drama? They're young boys.
Hormones are boiling, and they're starting to look at certain things, and the girls that were just icky-cootie things are now really looking good.
Yeah, I mean, it's like saying...
Well, you know what? I'll give you the quadruple-breasted Vita woman, and I'll raise you one Twilight.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. It's the same thing.
There you go. We need the commercial. Yeah. We need the commercial.
It sparkles.
Yeah. Oh.
And it's double-sided. I'll let you read whatever you want into that one.
Yeah. And on that note...
highly disturbing note.
I want to go ahead and thank everybody for joining us today. Oh, Lord, this has been a show and a half.
Indeed.
It's almost like having two shows, right?
Yeah.
One at the front and one at the back.
There you go.
Which, if I had said, would mean something completely different. I want to thank, of course, from Hello the Future. That's hello hyphen the hyphen future.net. For those people who don't know what a hyphen is, it's a dash. Nicole Deeker.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank, of course, from Genderatic, and I'll let you spell that one out, genderatic.com, Typhon Blue.
You know what? I can't even spell it. GenderRatic. Yay, I did it.
Hey, all right. And from someone who I'll never ask to spell anything, Eric Kimball from BlakeBunny.com.
Thank you, Tom, for not asking me to spell things.
And yes, that leaves me, your host. I'm Thomas Revoir from 910 Comics. That's 910CMX.com. Make sure to check our show notes for all the information that you didn't catch here. And we'll see you in the funny fevers.